Today's episode of Point Breakaway is brought to you by Game Time. Okay, folks, time for a little pop quiz. Do you think Kings or Ducks tickets are cheaper 3 weeks or 3 hours before the game? You can find the answer with Game Time, the ticket buying app that proves patience is more than just a virtue. It can save you some serious cash. Game Time is the leader in last-minute tickets. Pick your deal, see the view from where you're sitting, and buy in two taps. More than 12 million fans have downloaded the Game Time app and discovered the fastest, easiest way to get into the game. So download Game Time in the App Store or Google Play. Work that clock to your advantage and score last-minute tickets. Happy Monday. Welcome to Point Breakaway, the Southern California hockey podcast about the Kings, Ducks, and whatever else comes to mind. I am sitting here at home, and the great Shane O'Brien is, I believe, also sitting at home after having a much more exciting weekend than I had. Shane, how you doing on this Monday?
What's up, Coop? Yeah, buddy, I'm hurting a little bit. We had, like I said last week, we had my boy Scotty's Upshaw's birthday party weekend. So I ended up going out on a boat Friday and then up to LA Saturday for Rufus DeSole and to a pretty sick after party up in the Hollywood Hills. So I'm not 26 anymore, Coop. I'm 36 and I still think I can party like I'm 26, but I clearly can't. So I'm playing guilty today. I'm not 100%, but as all good pros do, you got to find a way to get it done.
So believe it or not, before this podcast, I may have talked to your old coach, Barry Trotz, about you and told him about this podcast and my excitement over this podcast. And he said, Obi has definitely played guilty more than once in his career. So you should ask him about that at some point. But and we'll get to that eventually. But it's so funny because my window, I can see the Hollywood Hills at night. And so before I go to bed, I stare at it and I think it's so beautiful. And as I was staring at it, you were probably living it up.
And yeah, I was staring right back down at the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, and also you missed one hell of a second birthday party for my son, Ethan. Lots of coffee, bagels, and kids running around. I believe I sent you a picture over the weekend.
I did.
And you thought it was pretty cool.
Good looking kid. Yeah, he's cutie. So I'm glad.
Looks like his mom.
Say happy birthday to him for me. And I'm glad his party went well.
Don't worry. Next party, you'll bring Upshaw and Lupul. How's that sound for the big three?
All right, deal.
All right, cool. Well, all right. So lots has happened since we last spoke because, believe it or not, games have been played. So we have real shit to talk about. Finally, yay! Shane, how excited are you to talk about games?
Yeah, no, it's great that hockey's back. You know, it's definitely a long off season for these guys, and when they get back at it, you can see the optimism in their games and the stuff I have seen so far. You can tell that it's early in the season. There's a lot of mistakes being made. It's not as crisp as, you know, an NHL game will be 20 games in the season when you're feeling really good. But the fans are excited. We're excited. It gives us something to talk about, and let's get this NHL season going.
Yeah, let's do it. So one thing I want to start us off with is a great story that Eric Stevens with The Athletic, our coworker, wrote about the optimism around the Ducks at the moment. And the optimism around the Ducks seems to be, I don't want to use the term delusional, but I will use that term delusional, only because they have some really good young players. And Shane, we're going to get to talking about those young players, but they're not super highly ranked guys. They're not guys like Jack Hughes or any of the big names out there, but they're guys who played really well in the AHL, and they're players who have some speed and have some creativity. And I will kick us off with a quote from Chris Coldiron of Costa Mesa from Eric's story, in which Chris says, "I think this team is going to be better than a lot of people are saying. And I realize that a big portion of the people's concern is the youth of the team, but I think that youth is a pretty high level youth. I think a lot of teams would be happy to take some of the young talent that we have." And I went to the game on Saturday night while you were hanging out with Scotty Upshaw and Joffrey Lupul. By the way, Upshaw, one of my favorite players I've ever covered. And
Paris Hilton might have been at the party too, I'm just saying, but keep going.
Okay, well, there we go. I've actually kind of wondered what's gone on with her of late, but that's cool. We can get to that later, or we can talk about that now. But either way, Shane was partying with Paris Hilton as I was.
We'll get to that later. We'll get to that later.
Yeah, I can't even wrap my brain around this. But cool, I'm living vicariously through you again. And so I watched the game, and the one thing, moving back to the game, the one thing that I noticed was this team was playing downhill. They were playing fast. They were trying stuff, like creative things. They were doing all these things that over the last several years when Randy Carlyle was coach, they just never did. And more than anything, Shane, it looked like they were having just the time of their lives doing it. And I know that they're at home. I know they've got the crowd behind them. I know that it's a long season. And look, these kids have never really played an 82-game NHL season. But what do we think about the 2-0-0 start for the Ducks? And does this Dallas Eakin sort of mindset and fresh reset coming in, has that already made a difference?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great start for them. I saw that article too. Josh, you sent it over to me. I have a question. Does that guy paint his face like that for every single Ducks
yes.
game or just every single one?
Yes.
So on like a Tuesday, if it's the Carolina Hurricanes, he still paints his face, even if it's not a big game or anything like that?
Apparently so, according to the story. That's unreal, right?
That's impressive. I'll give that guy a lot of credit. Good for him. But when it comes back to the Ducks, it's a great start. Listen, it's only two games into the season. But, hey, it's better than starting 1-2, especially with a young team and a new coach. But like I said to you last week, when you have Gibby and Nett, he gives you a chance to win every single night. And they have some good young players. I watched them play the home opener. I was really impressed with this guy's kind of a veteran now, but Derek Grant had a great game. And the young kid, I'm really interested to see him grow into his role here is this Max Jones kid. Kind of reminds me of an older pro, big, strong, can protect the puck, good game down low, and plays with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder and a little piss and vinegar, as I like to say. So him and the young kid on D, Brandon Gould, I was impressed with him. He made some plays behind the net, threw the guy to the middle on his backhand, you know, where he could have just went up the wall with it. He took his time, looked to the middle, hit the centerman with a little backhand pass. You don't see that very much anymore, especially a young defenseman. So I was impressed with him, obviously with Gibby. And like you said about the rump tempo, Dallas is going to play an up tempo style game. He's going to let them be creative offensively. There's still going to be a lot of structure to the game, but I think they're excited to have him coaching for them, and they're playing hard for him. It's only two games, but it's a good start. It's a good start for Ducks hockey.
You mentioned Max Jones kind of like an older pro. I think a faster version of me and a little more mobile version of Milan Lucic. What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's a good comparable. Just a new age Lucic, right? Like, you know, back in the day when Lucic was in his prime and when I was playing against him, you know, at the pace of play then, he was a good skater. For his size, he could skate very well. But obviously the game's gotten quicker. It's changed a lot. So this Max Jones is a better skater, definitely very more mobile than Lucic was for sure. But he's definitely that's a good comparison. New age Lucic, but maybe not as tough as Lucic was, but it's a pretty good comparison.
One thing that the Ducks have this year that they did not really have a year ago is a healthy Andrei Kashe, and on Saturday he looked just like an absolute stick of dynamite. He was all over the ice. He was going to the dirty areas. He was creating stuff. He had two assists. How much will him being healthy and being able to stay healthy impact the team this season? And on top of that, was the non-trade for Justin Falk, because they had a trade in place, as reported by our Eric Stevens, and Justin Falk couldn't come to a contract extension agreement with the Ducks. Will that turn out to be the best non-trade that Bob Murray has ever made?
Yeah, so sometimes the GM, the trades you don't make turn out being the best ones for sure. And Kase, I mean, I told you I played with him in San Diego. But after about a month into the season, I could tell how much skill he had, the way he could skate with the puck at high speeds and make plays, which not a lot of guys can do, especially in the American League. And he does play with a little edge on his shoulder, you know, for a Czech kid. He plays hard. He goes to dirty areas. He can take a hit. He'll give a hit every now and then. But like you said, the way he plays, there's chances for him to get hurt. I hope he doesn't change his game because of that, because I don't think he'll be as effective if he doesn't play with that edge and go to dirty areas and get rewarded. But if he stays healthy, he's going to be a big, big part of the Ducks this year for sure.
It was funny because we did talk about him in the last podcast, but it was almost like seeing him live. It was like, oh, yeah, this is what one of the things they've been missing. I don't
yeah,
think
he's
he would have.
He's electric.
he's unreal. And yeah. And he really is just an absolute just joy to watch. And when the team scores and he's on the ice, he's just so unbelievably happy and excited. And just a real quick aside on him, he was my waiter at a Ducks charity event called Ducks and Tucks. I don't know if had to do that when you were there, Shane.
I did. It was one of the best nights of the year, the old Ducks and Tucks.
You were the sous chef.
I don't know exactly what my role was back in the day. I think the year I played, we did it at the Honda Center. It was called Ducks and Tucks still, but I think it had a casino kind of night. I think that's what it was. So I think we were dealers back in the day. And that's what they did now. So it's probably different now, right? What they're servers. Is that what they do?
Yes, they're waiters. And so Andre was my waiter, and he gave, if I could tip, I would have given him a good 20% because that's exactly what he deserves. So since then I've been a big fan.
I have a great story from that. So it was me and Dustin Penner were the last two guys there. I think we were probably trying to hang around to mingle with some of the fans that were kind of leaving. So we went back in the dressing room to take our tux off or give our jersey back or whatever it was. And we're just getting ready to leave, and in comes Tamo Solani with probably five or six or seven of his people. So we're sitting in the dressing room. Tamo's got a good little glow on. He lights up a stogie, and he just sat there and told stories for about 30 and 45 minutes. And I was a rookie. I was 23 years old. And I just looked over at Penner, and I was like, this is fucking awesome, man. Like, we're sitting here right now with Tamo Solani, and he's telling us stories from when he played in Winnipeg when he was, 18 years old. And it was just, as a young kid, to your dream to play in the NHL, to be sitting in there smoking a cigar with Tamo Solani at the Honda Center, and he's telling beauty stories. It was one of the best nights ever. So I just thought I'd throw that in there for you.
So Tamo's got an entourage, or had an entourage?
No, he just had like his wife with him and all his buddies, because he'd been living in California. He's been living here forever, right? So he knows so many people, and obviously all the people that came to the charity event were sponsors and stuff. So I think there were just people he knew, and I think he was just like, hey, let's go in the dressing room for a couple beers or a couple drinks. And me and Penns were getting ready to leave, and he was there. And he said, where are you boys going? Sit down, have a stogie. I don't even smoke stogies, but I'm like, I'm not saying no to Tamo, right? Yeah, I'll have a stogie. And he just sat there and told beauty stories about Winnipeg and his career. And I mean, Flash is just such a good dude. It was awesome, man. As a young kid, 23 years old, I was just like, this is fucking great.
So my big question about the Ducks, and Tamu did tweet out or post on Instagram, I don't remember which social platform, before the season, he thought this team was going to surprise some people. And where do they go from here after this start? They've got a bit of a road trip coming up. What do you think? What do you see? What are you looking for coming up from this team?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great start for them. And obviously when you have, like I keep saying this, I mean, I probably keep saying it all years, when you have John Gibson in net, and Gibby, he's one of the best goalies in the league. He makes saves that other goalies can't make. So as long as he can stay healthy, these young kids got to continue to grow, continue to get better. They're going into Detroit tomorrow night. They should be able to get a win there or points. And they got Pittsburgh, Columbus. So they got some tough games going into Boston. They got some tough road games here. This will be a good test for them. But they got some mojo going. It's only two games, but once you get off to a good start in the NHL, you're kind of feeling good. You get on the plane with the boys, you play some cards, you get into, Detroit, you go for dinner tonight, and you get up and try to win a hockey game tomorrow. So it's only two games, but I think they're feeling pretty good about themselves.
And one thing I noticed just watching that game specifically was, so they played San Jose on Saturday. That was the game I went to. And San Jose's got Joe Thornton, who's, as we know, absolute legend. One of the best guys I think I've met around the league, just tremendous person. And somebody who's taken such incredible care of himself that he's been able to stay effective into his late 30s and early 40s. And I was watching Ryan Getzlaf play against, I don't remember if he was really matched up against Joe Thornton, but their games are kind of similar. They both play along the boards really well. They're both tremendous passers. And I was thinking to myself, and Eric Stevens, our beat writer, has written about this, that Getzy could be like a Jumbo. He could be like a Joe Thornton type guy, where he could eventually become somebody that can stay in the league just simply based on the fact that he's got great hands, can pass, amazing vision. And I didn't quite buy it for a little bit, just because to me, Joe Thornton is just, he's one of a kind. But watching that game, just seeing Getzlaf's vision, the types of passes he was throwing, wasn't the fastest guy out there, obviously, at his age, but overall, I could kind of see it. And Obi, I'm just thinking what your take is on Getzlaf this season. He's not going to be the guy on the team. At least that's sort of how it's kind of being told to us. But man, can he still pass the puck? Does he still have incredible vision on the power play? He's still going to be important for them.
Yeah, obviously Getzlaf is going to be huge for him. In the dressing room, he's the leader of that team, the leader of that franchise, and he's going to be a big part of them. As for Joe Thornton, I'm with you, man. We used to always talk in the NHL, you know, average NHL players like me, who would you be if you could change to be somebody else in the NHL? And my guy was always, I'd like to be Joe Thornton. He was just big. He never really looked like he had to skate that hard. He was always making good plays. He was physical. And if you wanted to fight, he'll drop his gloves and fight you. Unbelievable on the half wall. And like you said, he's taking great care of himself. For him to still be playing at this age, with the game has changed so much and so much faster. But when you're that smart, like Jumbo and Getzy and these guys, like the one thing I love about watching Getzy play is he slows the game down to his pace. I mean, he is so much smarter than everyone else. His skill is obviously unbelievable. He's strong. His vision, his passing ability. So Getzy will be able to play as long as he wants. Will he want to play into his 40s? I don't think that's not the feeling I'm getting from him when I play golf with him and talk to him. He does love the game, obviously, but I don't think he wants to play quite as long as Jumbo's been playing for.
So even though he ghosted you at the golf course this summer several times, the time you saw him, did he seem like he was in great shape and ready to rock?
Yeah, he's always in great shape. I mean, every time I see him, he just looks like he's getting skinnier and skinnier. And that's just because basically he says he doesn't need the strength like he used to back in the day when we were playing against each other, right? There was guys like myself or bigger defensemen that he had to worry about leaning on, where now it's all about just being as quick and light on his feet as he can. So he was in great shape when I seen him this summer, super lean. He's a pro, right? He knows what it takes. He gets it done each summer. He's ready to rock. So, I mean, I think Getzy's going to be fine. He'll be a huge part of that team. It's going to be up to the young kids to continue to develop and help Getzy, and they will go as far as the Ducks will take them, kind of thing.
So we move from the unbridled optimism of the Ducks to something completely different that we saw on Saturday night, which was that Kings-Oilers game, to which I just watched that and I felt really badly for Todd McClellan, just simply because I could see Dave Tippett just rolling Connor McDavid out there, matching him up against anyone who he could beat, and he just beat everyone on that team. And I don't want to say there was any real optimism for the Kings going into the season, because I think both you and I had them ranked pretty low, but that game, and granted, it's just one game, and you know, you're an NHL player, Shane. You know it's 82 games, anything can happen. But watching that game, I was just like, yeah, this is a rebuild. This is going to take a while. What was your thoughts, or what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, McDavid is nasty. You hear the comments Dewey made, Drew Doughty, after the game. Drew Doughty has been matched up against the top players in the NHL for the last, 5-10 years almost. You know, it's been a while for him. He's a competitor. He said in some of his quotes, he loves being matched up against the top guys. But when it comes to McDavid, he just said it's almost unfair. This kid is so fast. The way he can skate and move at the puck at the same time is an absolute nightmare for a defenseman. The way he can go from where I saw Dewey said this too, which is a great point. He goes from where you just kind of looks like he's kind of not floating, but gliding through the neutral zone, to where as soon as he gets the puck, it's like a step and a half, and he is at top speed and gone. So as a defenseman, you think you have your gap under control, and then he turns it up like that, boom, he's gone. There's nothing you can do. I mean, Drew Doughty is one of the best defensemen in the world, and when he says that McDavid's almost unstoppable, it's just really the truth. You know, it's just, he's that world-class of a player.
I think the quote Obi's talking about here is, I love playing against Connor, but I realize a lot of the time he is going to make me look foolish. That's just the bottom line. And he beat him once. And look, like, it's really hard. I know it's really hard when you're a defenseman, because you can do 1,000 things right, and then the one thing you do wrong, we pick apart. But he beat him once, and we lifted his stick and made a really nice pass to Draisaitl, then found Cashian for a goal. He drew a penalty against Doughty. I mean, are we reading too much into how well Connor McDavid played against Drew Doughty? Did Drew Doughty actually do better than we thought against Connor McDavid? And it just seemed, beyond that matchup, there was just, Dave Tippett just seemed like he was able to dictate whatever he wanted at home against the Kings, who don't seem to have a lot of depth.
Yeah, and I mean, a guy like McDavid, you know, we can't be too hard on Drew Doughty here. I mean, this guy, you're never really going to stop him. You just got to kind of try to contain him and keep him to maybe 1 or 2 points and just not let him have a big night where he gets 3 goals and an apple or something like that. But you're never going to really slow him down. And listen, you could pick whatever your defenseman you want, but I would pick Drew Doughty to be one of my, you know, top three picks to be a guy I want to play against Connor McDavid, because Drew Doughty's, he's a competitor. Like we said last week, he plays hard. He loves the physical aspect. He battles. But sometimes you got to tip your hat, and Connor McDavid is that good. The one positive I will take out of the game for the Kings is that they got, as they scored 5 goals. For a team that struggled to score offensively the last few years, to come out of the gates in game 1 and score 5 goals, I think is very positive for them and encouraging for Todd, especially being a new coach in there. If they can score goals like that, it's obviously going to help them. And, you know, giving up 6, it's not their DNA. You know, that's not going to happen very often. That's a good veteran, prideful team that will find a way to play good defense. But they should be positive with the 5 goals. If they can, you know, find a way to put pucks in the net, it could be a little bit better year for them.
Absolutely, 100%. And one of the big positives I did take away from that game was the Amadio Clifford-Lewis line, in which we're trying to figure out if that was the third or fourth line. We're not quite sure. But, I mean, as everyone knows, or at least whoever listened to the first podcast, we do love Kyle Clifford on this podcast and Trevor Lewis. And Amadio looked fantastic, too. And that line seems like a group that really is just a trio that can really, I want to say, play hard and set the tone for everyone else. And that's going to be a good line for Todd McClellan moving forward. Am I right about that, Obi?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, obviously Mike Smith, you know, he was a little wandering out of his net on a few of those goals. But on the one, he goes in behind the net and you see Clifford coming down hard, forechecking as hard as he can. Comes in there, goes old school style, little slash on Smitty's stick, gets the puck away, slides it out to Louis, and Lewis puts it home. So, you know, those are the goals they're going to have to score and generate. They're not going to be very flashy goals. They're not going to be tic-tac-toe plays mostly. But if they get in there on the forecheck and grind teams down and cycle and take pucks to the net, they're going to create a lot of energy. And they've been doing it their whole year. It's just, can they continue to put up points? History would say they can't, but they're all good players. They play hard every night. And that's a good energy line for the Kings.
Yeah, you with that team, you're going to need energy, especially when their second line got beat so badly. And that's the line of Adrian Kempe, Jeff Carter, and Ilya Kovalchuk. And I don't really know what I can take personally watching those three. I just know what talking to people I've sort of heard, or just checking in with some scouts, is that Kovalchuk is just doing his own thing. He's
shocker.
Really a fit on that line. And yeah, and he just isn't a fit just in general. And again, it's just one game. The guy has a tremendous amount of energy. He apparently loves his teammates and loves it when they score. He really likes it, obviously, when he scores. It's not a bad team guy. He's just somebody who is, again, he played in a different era. He played during a time where coaches let him roam, where he was essentially a defenseman or forward. Didn't need a lot of structure, and this is a team that plays with a lot of structure. And I think that especially with that line, you can really get Jeff Carter going if you move a younger player up to that line. Who knows who it could be, but that line was a -8. And again, I think you try him a couple more games, but ultimately I think that line may need a bit of a correction moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not worried about Carter. I mean, Cartsy's such a good pro. I've been such a good pro for a long time. I mean, it's the first game of the season. He's going to be fine. You're going to get what you're going to get out of Carter. And yeah, my boy Kempe, after I pumped his tires last week, saying he was kind of the guy that I thought needed to take that next step and be a real good pro and be a real good second line center for the Kings, and goes out and has a tough night. So hopefully he can bounce back. But I'm going to say it again. He's one of those guys that if the Kings have any chance to surprise some teams, he's got to be better than he was in the home opener. In the season opener, that's for sure. And Colby, I mean, what's he going to say? Whatever scout you're talking to, that's just kind of – that's his career in a nutshell. He's never really been a big structure guy. But back in the day when he was putting up points, scoring 40, the coaches didn't care. I mean, if you're going to score 40, pretty much any coach in the NHL is going to let you do whatever the fuck you want out there. But when you're now coming into a new team and – you got a big ticket and you're not putting up offensive numbers and you're still not playing within the structure of the team. You know, I don't know, Kovey, is he a good guy? I hope he is, but you know, if I'm on his team and I'm a veteran guy with him and I'm saying, hey, I'm like, Kovalchuk, come on, man, we need you to buy in here. We need you to play the way, you know, we've meant, you know, Brown could say that to, they got Stanley Cup winners, Brown, Kopitar, Lewis, Clifford, like these guys are playing the right way. If you're Kovalchuk, how can you not want to play the right way? And if he doesn't continue to, or if he does continue to play his own way, I think, you know, eventually he'll see himself in the press box.
So you're some, and that was something that Willie Desjardins did last year, and we kind of ripped him for it, but maybe it wasn't such a bad decision overall. But we can get to that after a few games. I mean, Kovalchuk could have a hat trick the next game, and then we could be sounding incredibly silly. This is only one game.
No, but, hey, Coop, I love Kovalchuk. He has so much skill, and like I said last week, he's a veteran guy, and he's got sick style out there, and I get all that things, but, you know, he's not the player he once was, and if he doesn't want to change his game, then I don't care who the coach is. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to play if you don't buy into the system. And I just think he needs to buy in a little bit more. That's all.
Yeah. And I kind of agree on that. Well, not kind of, I totally agree on that. And from what you watch of Kovalchuk, how is he not buying in? Is there any specific example you see, or is there anything that you can recall just from the last year or so where he just, it seems like he's not completely engaged with, because again, it's not really so much his fault to the degree of it's the fact that the Kings play a very structured game.
Yeah, he just, he's a bit of a wanderer out there in his own zone. He's never been the greatest defensive player, but in his defense, that's because he didn't really have to. Early in his NHL career, he was so good, put up so many sick numbers. Then he goes over to play in Russia, and you know, when you play in Europe, the ice is bigger, and especially in the Russian league, in the KHL, I never played it, but from guys that played in it, you know, defense is, it's fucking, no one plays D. They don't give a shit. It's all about points. It's all about points. So for Kobe to leave the NHL for whatever he did 4 or 5 years to go play in the KHL and then come back and think he's going to pick up where he left off, it just doesn't work like that. And I'm not saying he doesn't try hard out there, or he's not playing, he doesn't want to win. But I mean, if you're not scoring goals, you're not putting up points, you can't get scored on. You got to play good defensively. You got to block shots. You got to get pucks in. You got to get pucks out. You got to do all the stuff that sucks because you're not scoring to help the team win. And is he doing that? When I watched him play last year, no. It's only one game this year. We'll see if he can make the adjustment.
There's a couple other things that I wanted to touch on in this podcast about the Kings. And one is someone you're familiar with because you've watched a lot of Vancouver Canucks games, is Ben Hutton. Ben looked really, really good in that first game. He's moving the puck forward, deceptive, getting it out of the zone. I think he's a really... he's going to end up being a nice little signing by the Kings this season. What do you think about Ben Hutton and just his ability to kind of stabilize the defense with what he's able to do?
Yeah, it was a great signing. And we talked about this on our first one last week. He was my guy that I kind of highlighted as it's going to be a real pleasant surprise for Kings fans and the Kings coaching staff. And it's a great signing. It's a one-year deal. I watched him play a lot last year in Vancouver as I do some radio stuff up in Vancouver as well. And I know Travis Green really worked with him, gave him a lot of ice time. And just the second half of the year last year, he improved so much that I was like, man, this kid's a legit NHL defenseman now. Like he's got good size. He moves east to west very well. He's got a good shot. He can play the power play. He can kill penalties. He's not scared to get his nose dirty. The Canucks just couldn't fit. They just didn't have room for him or couldn't fit him in. And boom, the Kings give him a nice one-year deal. And I'm glad you noticed that because he is a real nice player and he's going to be a real nice surprise for the Kings.
And one more thing about that game that I noticed, at least, because I covered him a little bit when I was in Nashville and have just seen him throughout the NHL playoffs, making two straight Stanley Cup finals, and then last year falling off, was the Oilers' addition of James Neal. He looked like James Neal in that game, and if he is playing that way, should Edmonton be okay this year? He looked good.
He looked like the real deal James Neal again, didn't he?
He looked like the real deal.
The real deal, James Neal.
Me praising James Neal is interesting because we certainly have had our moments in the locker room where he may not have liked something I tweeted or wrote. I don't know how he ever found what I tweeted, but apparently he did. But I'll praise him just because I think he looked phenomenal in that game. And I think that could be something to, at least for fans of hockey who listen to this podcast, to watch out for, because if he can play well, that could be a nice little addition for the Oilers, though Mike Smith going all over the place and playing the pucks to playing, essentially being the leading scorer for the Kings that game, or yeah. one of them was not a good one. So, yeah, he looked like the real deal, and I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, no, and the Mike Smith thing, first of all, that's how Smitty – listen, I watched the first game the Oilers played, and Smitty made about 10 breakout passes that some defenseman in the NHL couldn't make. And as a D-man, when your goalie can play the puck that well, it's fucking night and day how much it helps your game. But when it comes to James Neal, listen, he had a bad year in Calgary, and we all know it. He scored, I think before that, the last 5 years, he scored 30 or over 20, something like that. So you know he can put the puck in the net. You know he has great size, great skill. He's playing in Edmonton now with great fans, with a good young team, with the best player in the world, arguably. So I think he will bounce back and have a good year. And I mean, anybody can have one bad year, but when you're a guy like that, it's tough to put two bad years together. So I think he will bounce back.
And lastly, we mentioned Mike Smith. The tweet of the game was from my friend, the Royal Half. The tweet was, quote, Mike Smith to Dustin Brown for the 45th time in his career.
Yeah, no, hey, listen, Smitty comes out of the net and he's going to turn him over every now. He's going to make some plays where if you're a fan of the Oilers, you're going to be like, what the fuck, Smitty, stay in your net. But he's also going to make 10 sick breakout passes and on certain nights where your defense is going to be like, wow, that was the easiest game ever because Smitty broke the puck out the whole night. So, but when he does wander and get out of the net, it looks really bad. I saw them both. I was like, oh, that's a tough look for a goaltender. That's when you're just like, stay in your net, buddy. But I mean, he's world class. Yeah. He'll make those plays more than he doesn't.
Yeah, that was pretty bad overall. So, and yeah, that was just not good. But that's gonna be something for the Oilers to deal with. Not so much the Kings.
Yeah, that's not our problem.
No, that's not our problem. But they will play them quite a bit this year. So I just kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit.
No,
so.
And I agree with you. Those are the teams like the Pacific Division. Whoever plays the best in their own division, I think, is obviously going to come out of it because the Central Division is so good. I just think they're going to kick the shit out of everyone this year. So you got to take advantage of these division games. They're even more important this year because the Central Division is so deep and so stacked.
So lastly, one thing I did want to point out from this game was, and we talked about the Kempe, Carter, Kovalchuk line. They were a minus 7.02 CF percentage relative, which is not good when it comes to puck possession. The Blake Lizotte line was a minus 32.325 CF percentage relative, which is horrific when it comes to puck possession because in part of the matchup situation. Amadio's line was really good at 36%, and Kopitar's line was minus 34.5. This is all 5-on-5. Shane, do you have any idea what I'm talking about right now?
Well, only because you kind of tipped your hat at the start of the podcast, but before you kind of told me what it was, I had no idea. What's it called? Corsi? Is that what it's called?
Corsi, puck possession. Corsi, yep. Yeah. Yep. Possession. We're going to have to talk about it at some point.
Gotcha.
Yep. So do you know what I'm talking about?
Now I do, yeah, because you let me know what it is. But before, I mean, I had heard it before. When you brought it up before we got on the air here, I obviously had heard it before and I had an idea what it is. But, I mean, you can explain it to me. I'm not 100% exert. Like, how much time you have the puck opposed to how many times you just fucking turn it over? Is that what it is?
I mean, pretty much. It's all about shot attempts at the net. And basically, the relative is relative to when you were on the ice versus you being off the ice. So if you have a positive relative, that's good. If you have a negative relative, that's bad. So Shane O'Brien, in a sort of episode of This Is Your Life, do you want to know what your Corsi was from when it started being tracked per hockeyreference.com?
100%. Let's hear it. Give it to me.
Your career Corsi relative, and this is all 5-on-5 again, was a minus 1.3. Your CF percentage was 49.2. But keep in mind that your D zone starts were higher than your O zone starts. So henceforth, I dub thee a pretty good Corsi player for your role.
You know what that says? That just says I had a good first pass, buddy, which I did. I mean, we always say you got to have a good first pass, crispy rice, spicy tuna. And if you get it out of the, if you can make a good first pass as a defenseman and get it on that winger stick and just get it out of your zone, it makes the game a lot easier. So when I was younger, I took pride in that. So I think that's probably why I have decent numbers at that, because I just like to make that good first pass. That's just kind of what I prided my game on, to be honest with you. I didn't really have that much offensive ability when it came to being in the ozone, but I took pride in being able to make a breakout pass and make a pass under pressure. So I think that's probably along the lines of why I had a decent Corsi or whatever.
Well, yeah, and also you were starting the D zone a lot earlier in your career because you were a big penalty killer and somebody who was relied on there. So next time you see Paris Hilton, tell her that you were a pretty good Corsi player in your career.
Yeah.
Also, what is she up to? Looking good. I mean, I haven't heard that name in ages.
Yeah, buddy, honestly, I didn't even talk to her or whatever. I just, like, I was walking by to go grab a drink, and I just caught her out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, holy fuck, there's Paris Hilton. And honestly, she looks good. Like, she looks better than the last time I saw her, which was probably, like, fucking 3 or 4 years ago. But I don't know what she's doing. I think she's doing, like, some makeup shit or something. But whatever she's doing, it's working for her because she's still looking pretty solid. And obviously still partying like she always has. She's not scared to party, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's super fascinating that you bumped into Paris Hilton probably at around a time, as I said in the last podcast, I was hitting my REM cycle of sleep or watching a Pixar movie or something like that. So overall, Obi, you and I, again, very, very different weekends. So
yeah, I gotta give a shout out. Today is actually his official birthday, my boy Scotty Upshaw, 36 years old today. So I'm sure he'll be listening to the podcast. He's a fan of ours. He's a good dude. So happy birthday, Updog, 36, you old fuck. But happy birthday.
He was always my number one pick to eventually be on The Bachelor from the NHL. But as he's getting older and settling down, I assume that's probably no longer the case. But a good dude.
I would never put it past the Updog that he maybe be The Bachelor someday. Who knows? Who knows? That guy can do whatever he wants, man. He's had an unbelievable career, but... Like I tell him,
great
now,
dude,
you know,
too.
Great dude. It's tough. Listen, we play hockey for such a long time and are blessed to make a lot of money and have a great lifestyle and live the dream. And then, you know, it comes to an end and it's not easy for guys. It's hard. It's a transition. And, whatever Updog does after life after hockey is going to be fine. So I wouldn't put it past him. You might be on The Bachelor someday, Josh. You might get your wish, buddy.
All right. Well, this begins the. I don't know what his social life is right now, but maybe one day I'll get to see Scotty Upshaw giving out roses.
I wouldn't put it past him, buddy. I wouldn't put it past him.
If anyone follows me on Twitter, they probably know I am obsessed with the Bachelor franchise. Hence why I bring this up, and I will try to bring Obi into this somehow at some point. We'll see if he actually.
I don't know about that, buddy.
Cool.
I don't know. I've watched him. I've watched a couple of them. It's just. I mean, it's not the worst stuff in the world. I mean, it's watchable for sure, but I'm not like a diehard fan like yourself. But hey, man, it's cool. I mean, it's probably a great show to watch with your wife, right? Does your wife love watching it with you?
I actually am the one in my household who pushes it. She's not the one.
She's not the one.
I need to watch it. It is my shut off my brain moment pretty much every Monday or whenever we decide to get around to it on DVR. And there are definitely athletes. I've never seen an NHL player on there, but... Maybe one day, dude. Maybe one day.
Now? Is it on right now, or when's the next?
No,
Bachelor? When's the next one?
We just finished Bachelor in Paradise. We don't get to Bachelor season until January, so we got a bit of a wait here.
We got a bit of wait. Okay, I'll come January. I'll give the first couple episodes a go. See now we're boys now on this podcast. I'll give it a college try for you, buddy. But no,
thanks,
no
man.
No guarantees. I get through the whole season.
All right, well, yeah, you don't have to. My wife can't even get through the whole season. I'm the one who's generally watching. So,
yeah.
All right, well, that's all we got for today. And we appreciate you all listening, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday.